Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bored YouTube channel for your Thursday afternoon show with myself, Jacob, and my co-host over here, Kirk Evans, and we are here in the final week of the NBA's regular season. So there's some hot topics to talk about as far as the NBA is concerned and teams with playoff aspirations, but we also have a new contract to discuss from the NBA, and we have a little bit of a draft breakdown for a certain player. So before we get started, make sure you guys hit that like button if you enjoy the content that you see along the way, and please make sure you are subscribed. Excuse me. It is almost the end of the regular season, but have no fear. We have tons of content coming at you for the rest of the playoffs and beyond. Keep it locked over here with the Hammer Betting Network. But the team we're going to be starting off with today is the Denver Nuggets, and their bid to get the one seed, which is a very good one at that, after beating the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll be discussing if anybody can beat that team in the Western Conference. We'll be discussing Drew Holiday and his brand new four-year extension worth $135 million. And then we'll finish off with a Zach Edey draft analysis, preview, breakdown, whatever you want to call it, after his leading the Purdue Boilermakers to the final in the national championship, but ultimately falling short. He is all over mock drafts, and I want to get Kirk Evans and his sense on the situation. But before we get there, you told me before show it's your busy season. What's it been like the last week betting on the NBA?
As you can tell by my messy beard and my messy hair, definitely been a lot of stuff going on last week. Next few days, just kind of buckling down. But yeah, it's crazy trying to bet on spreads and totals when, you know, you have to figure out, do teams care? Do teams want to win? But, you know, it's been good. It's good. Definitely a lot of big edges out there if you find them.
So let's jump into the first topic that we have. And, of course, that was regarding the Denver Nuggets. So big win for the Nuggets yesterday and a humongous performance from Nikola Jokic in this one. It was a clash at the top of the Western Conference, almost the deciding game on who would be that Western Conference one seed. It's not completely locked up, but Denver win 116-107. Jokic goes 16 of 20 from the field for 41 points, adds in a measly 11 rebounds and 7 assists to go with it, even chipped in with 3 steals. Just, yeah, Jokic at his best when his team needed him most. It just feels like that is always the case for this player. So when it does come to the playoffs, does any team stack up to the level of Denver, in your opinion, at this point?
Well, I assume we're talking in the West. Everyone knows my thoughts on Boston. I definitely don't think anyone stacks up in terms of, even on a neutral court, I would certainly have Denver favored over anyone they would play. That being said, I definitely don't look at it as, I don't necessarily disagree with the betting markets, but I feel like general consensus right now is that Denver's kind of, you know, got a spot in the finals, which I would definitely not say I agree with. I think humans in general are pretty bad at making things that feel quite likely as a certainty. So even though I would definitely have Denver favored over every team in the West, there's really only one series, I would say, if Denver pulls Sacramento, that I would look at that as really a cakewalk of a series. Any other series, you know, I don't think their chances would be 95% plus or anything really that close. I think there are some teams that Denver would be maybe not. Obviously, I still think they're favored, but I think there would be some tough matchups. Dallas in particular, I think, would be a pretty tough matchup for Denver. I think Minnesota matches up with them pretty well, even though we saw last night Denver took care of them. And even last year in the playoffs, Denver kind of dominated them. A bit of a different team this year for Minnesota, though. They've been much better. So yeah, I think that they're clearly the best team. And if I had to pick one team, I would pick them. But I'm not sure I would pick them over the field to make the finals.
Okay, interesting. So you wouldn't, like, you don't think Denver would be favored against the field to make or to come out of the West?
Yeah, it's a good question. They've got NBA futures right here. Let's see. Western Conference. Yeah, so the Denver Nuggets, you can still get at plus 134. So I would say the market agrees with me there. It's just every team in the West, including the Lakers and Warriors, are very solid. You know, you're not running into the Orlando Magic or Indiana Pacers in the Western Conference playoffs. So if you have a really tough first round series, a really tough second round series, a really tough third round series, it's hard to make it out, even if you're the best team. They do have the best player. They're really shallow, so any injury would really hurt them.
Yeah,
that's obviously true. Any Jokic injury would completely cook them, but even lower down, even if KCP, Michael Porter, even Jamal, of course, got hurt, they'd be in significant trouble. They have one of the lesser benches of these really top-end contenders, and things really fall apart when Jokic goes to the bench. When Jokic is on, typically it doesn't matter too much. But yeah, I think they're clearly the best team in the West. But again, I don't think that they're like leaps and bounds above like I think Boston is in the East.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think I mostly agree with you there. Denver, they're the best team in the West, but they've got to go through likely three difficult playoff series to get out of the Western Conference, which again, I would expect them to do. But yeah, I think you said it best there, taking like a very likely and making it a certainty is a common trait that humans may have. And especially with the sporting world, it's just inconceivable. Like, this is the best team. How can anybody possibly beat this team 4 out of 7 times, especially if Denver do have the home seed all throughout the playoffs, or all throughout the Western side of the playoffs at the very least. If there is one team that can stop them, who would you pick as your best team to play against them? Who has the best chance of actually stopping this team?
Yeah, so I think OKC is the second best team in the West as a playoff team. I do think it becomes a real issue who covers Jokic in that matchup. Like, I think we would see a lot of Dort on Jokic. Chet, obviously, is really small and really skinny to cover a guy as big and as good in the post as Jokic. So it could be Dallas. It could be OKC. Those teams really are jumbled up to me. Like, I don't think that any team after Denver has that significant of an edge over each other. I think there are obviously tiers. I think, you know, Sacramento's pretty clearly at the bottom. New Orleans was looking really good, but now pretty injured. We'll see what happens with Ingram.
So
I would say probably Dallas, but not a strong take. I just think a lot of teams have, you know, some shot at beating them. I also think Denver's a bit of an interesting team in the sense that they definitely haven't had a dominant regular season. I've had them as the best team in the West, power ratings wise, all regular season. But looking here, they're a 5.4 adjusted net on dunks and threes, which is, you know, fourth in the league, not that dominant. They weren't that dominant last regular season either. Obviously, they're the team that looks like they can turn it up the most when the playoffs come around. But how much of a you know, gap do they have between what they do in the regular season and what they do in the playoffs? I think it's still an interesting question. Obviously, they coasted pretty easily to the championship last year. But I think the road they faced this year, assuming things go pretty normally, is going to be much, much, much more difficult. Like, all these teams are kind of equal or better. Like, who was the best team they played last year? Phoenix, who ended up kind of dominating Phoenix. And that was definitely the closest series spread. But Phoenix this year, I think, is still much better than Phoenix last year. I think, obviously, Minnesota this year is way better than Minnesota last year. They could get the Lakers again, who probably are, you know, similar team to last year as well. There was no OKC last year. So I think that they could play, you know, the best team they played last year in the playoffs could be around equal or even worse than the average opponent they get this year. So I think there still is a lot of story to be written about how good this Denver team is. Of course, if they just go and roll through the playoffs this year, then it's like, wow, this is actually a really dominant team who can clearly turn it on in the playoffs. I'm just not sure, you know, how big of a gap that is between what they can do when they're really focused. Obviously, there is some gap. Jokic is clearly a player who takes it easy against lesser competition. But even with that being said, I think there's still some story to be written about, you know, are they the Cavs with LeBron when they could just, you know, have like a 3 net rating in the regular season, roll up as whatever the 3 seed and just dominate? Or are they, you know, maybe 1 or 2 points net better in the playoffs, but not quite that upper tier level of dominant team?
Yeah, definitely see what you're saying there. You just mentioned a few of the teams in the Western Conference that you think could have a shot. Question here from Eric in the chat asking regarding the Pelicans, the Timberwolves, and the Thunder, and if maybe Denver is perceived to be more of a certainty than perhaps they are. Any prices out there you've seen on New Orleans, Minnesota, or OKC that tempt you for a bet?
Yeah, so I did bet New Orleans a while ago, pre all this negative injury stuff, when it looked like they were tracking. Actually, just think there's a lot of value in Western Conference outright because of how strong Denver's priced, but mostly because of how strong the Clippers are priced. The Clippers stink. They've totally fallen off. Kawhi's hurt. Harden's hurt. I don't really think they're like have fallen from. I thought they were in a tier similar to Denver to now probably below OKC, below Minnesota, below Dallas to me. But looking here, they're, you know, plus 600 to win the West on Chris. So I think there is like definitely some value. I'd probably go, you know, OKC at around plus 900 ish is probably solid. Same with Dallas. Even long shot like New Orleans, I think is probably fine. I don't really think, you know, the Clippers are even a particularly better team than a healthy New Orleans, and you're getting like 4x the price. So I think you're not maybe holding huge value on those bets, but I think if you want to ride one of those teams and have a specific feel on any of them, they're all like decent bets, especially just because the Clippers are so overpriced in that market.
So there you go. Maybe some value looking around the lower tier seeds of the NBA of the NBA's Western Conference. Possibility for these to come through and maybe upset the field. Eric says he's got OKC 25-1, Minnesota 35-1, New Orleans 60-1. Yeah, I think those are
all good numbers.
Yeah, I think those are some great positions to be in there. And Minnesota, especially if they get Cat back and healthy, they are definitely a threat. I mean, this team, still, I guess, could be the one seed, as could OKC, but they are certainly on the verge of it through the season. But let's shift into our next conversation here regarding the Drew Holiday contract. Well, the Boston Celtics have decided that they want to keep a lot of this core together and are willing to shell out money to make it happen. Drew Holiday has just signed an extension, 4 years, $135 million. He's going to turn 34 shortly here, so this contract will run until he's almost 38 years old. My question is, did the Boston Celtics overpay to keep Drew Holiday in a Celtics uniform?
Yeah, I definitely think they did. I'm not really sure why the Celtics signed this contract. I would say he's probably the least valuable of their starting five right now. He's 34 right now. He's clearly declining as a player. He's still really good, but has taken steps back offensively and defensively, I would say, this year. And yeah, their scheme's going to get insanely expensive. I don't really think that's a contract that you're going to be able to come off super easily as well. So I'm not really sure what the impetus was to sign this deal. I imagine at the time of the trade, there was probably some talk of, you know, if the season goes well, we'll do you right. And also, it's pretty easy to look at a team, you know, that's going to be one of the best regular season teams of all time and say, you know, let's keep this together for as long as possible. But they're not going to want to be a second apron team, you know, for multiple years. No one in the NBA is going to be willing to do that based on how strict the penalties are now. You know, you lose first round picks, you pay insane luxury tax bills. So they're going to have to move on from someone in the next few years. And I feel like Drew probably was the most logical guy and now doesn't exactly feel that way, especially considering how much older he is than a lot of the rest of the core and the fact that they have, you know, Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser, guys who could step into that role. Obviously, totally different players, but, you know, Boston would still be the best team in the league if they started Peyton Pritchard and didn't have Drew, in my opinion. So I don't really see why they felt the need to do this, but keeping Drew around overall is fine. You're the best team in the league, and hopefully you could just kind of figure out a way to get off them if they need to.
Yeah, it's not typical for Brad Stevens to not know what he's doing, so I'm sure there's some sort of idea or thought behind this. I just don't see it up front here. Yeah, the most expendable of this group of players is Drew Holiday. We're at the point where Derek White has probably surpassed Drew Holiday in many abilities, and it's not like Drew Holiday isn't a good player anymore. He's still a great player, but the decline has already started. He's going to be 34 years old in early June. It just, like, he's been making 34, well, we don't know the exact structure of the contract, but based on the average salary of his contract, he's been making like $34 million a year when he's 37, about to turn 38, and with a decline already starting to happen in 4 years' time, my goodness, well, 3 years' time when there's still like time on this contract, this is not going to look good, especially for a Celtics team that, you know, is going to be assumingly keeping Tatum around for a very long time, going to want to continue to put contending teams around his talent. That's going to become a whole lot more difficult with a lot of money going towards Drew Holiday. So it's a real head-scratcher why they went with this length. The money here isn't that bad. 34 years, fine. It's the length here that is certainly an issue. I personally just don't really understand why they went for 4 years here. 2 years, maybe even add on a bit more money, even makes a bit more sense.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And also, if you just look at his skills, what he's best at is, you know, being that top level defensive player. He's a solid offensive player, but hasn't really done much this year offensively, mostly due to need. But it's hard to be, you know, a tier one defensive player in the league if you lose a lot of athleticism. Not that he's ever been, you know, or not that he's been necessarily for the last few years a top level athlete, but once that starts declining, he's going to kind of be, you know, an above average, a plus level defender, but not in that elite tier. And then offensively, yeah, he's a really good offensive player if he's your fifth best offensive player in your starting lineup. But again, is that worth, I think I saw like 37, 38 million as the estimate for when he's 38, and he might not even be a player then. So just didn't really feel necessary. I imagine there's a lot more to this contract that we just kind of will never know about. So I think, I was surprised to see they did it. I was surprised to see the length. I agree with you that the actual dollars isn't that bad per year, but if you're signing them for 4 years, you should be able to get a discount early on, which it doesn't seem like they did. So I just don't really understand the logic of why they did this.
Yeah, I completely agree there. While we're on the topics of the Boston Celtics, we have a question from Howdy, who asks how you would price a hypothetical NBA finals between the Nuggets and the Celtics at this point, if Boston were to assumingly have home court.
Yeah, so I did price this out a few days ago, but I don't remember my exact price. Let me think about it. Give me a second here. I think I'd price them at like around like 65% likelihood to win, maybe a bit higher, you know, maybe in the minus 200 range.
Yeah,
I think would need to look. I think pretty clearly Boston would be significant favorites. I think some people would really like to bet Denver there, especially if they look really good throughout the playoffs. It's hard to say because obviously a lot of the playoffs.
I was about to mention.
It matters how both these teams look. You know, if Boston looks like they have in the regular season, then it could be a lot higher than that. If Boston kind of struggles to their way through and people's kind of prediction of, you know, is Boston's fourth quarter offense going to be there, will have a dramatic effect on this. But yeah, I would have Boston as pretty significant favorites.
Okay. Yeah, definitely makes sense. I'm not sure I'd go quite as high on Boston in that series, but I do agree they'd be favored by a decent amount in that series. Final topic we have today before discussing any betting that we may have. This has been an extremely polarizing player for anybody who does mock drafts. I've seen him lottery picked. I've seen him 38th overall, and I've seen him anywhere in between in the most recent batches. But Zach Edey got Purdue all the way to the national championship game, but wondering how much that this player's ability can scale up to the highest level of professional basketball, which is the NBA. I certainly have my thoughts on this, but let's open up with Kirk Evans. What do you make of Zach Edey's abilities, and do you think this could work in the NBA?
So it's a bit hard for me to really say where I think he should go because I don't have a great feel on the other prospects, but I have watched a lot of Edey. I think he's really not going to be much of an NBA player, if I had to guess. I guess there are some tail outcomes that are potentially really high. He was super dominant in college, but if you look at his offensive game, pretty much his entire skill set is that he's really big and really strong for how big he is and is able to move guys and get to that right hook. His post game isn't really advanced at all. He really just likes going right to that hook, which goes in a decent amount, but even right now, I don't even think that would be a positive, like, points per possession, half court possession in the NBA. It could get better, but he's going to face a lot of really big, really strong guys in the NBA. And you look at what happened against Klingon. He played well. He had 37 and 10. It was one of the more fake 37 and 10 games I've ever seen in my life. I didn't think he was particularly impressive.
Yeah.
He's not a very good passer. He's not great in the pick and roll. So it's kind of tough to envision what even it would look like. Like, maybe he could be a new version of a six man, kind of like a Lou Williams, but in total reverse, where you run your bench offense through Edie and can get to like a respectable points per possession level with him on the with him as kind of your bench leader. But I just don't really think he's going to even be a super solid offensive player. I think he'll be able to score and put up decent numbers, but then defensively, I think he'll give it a ton back. If you watched him with FIBA Canada at all, when he saw the court in space, he really struggled. Obviously, he has gotten better this year, but even in that championship game, when Connecticut's backup center came in and they kind of ran some more traditional NBA sets, just kind of standard high pick and roll, he let up like a bunch of alley-oops to him. He really struggled. He's not much of a mover. He's really big and really thick. So he's not exactly a guy who I project as to be much in the NBA, but again, he's projected to go, like you said, late lottery, maybe even later. So I don't think the NBA really anticipates him being a super high impact guy either.
Yeah, on the national championship, which is maybe what a lot of people will go to and say, he did 37-10 in a national championship game. UConn's game plan was clearly and has been revealed by their coach as he can get whatever he wants. Nobody else is scoring. Purdue only made one three in the first half, only took 2 3-point attempts in the first half. And UConn were a team that gets shots to the rim, gets shots from three. So basically just tried to make it impossible for Zach Edey's scoring on its own to keep up with the pace of scoring that UConn were going to manage all game. And the game plan worked to a T. I mean, as much as Zach Edey got his stats, nobody else could really do anything. And it was a comfortable win. Like, Purdue really could not have done anything else in the first half, and they were still down by six at the end of it. So as far as Zach Edey in the NBA, like, it's no secret. You know, this is the modern league. You need to have lateral quickness. You need to be able to play in pick and rolls on defense. You need to be able to move better. And it's just a skill set he doesn't have. It's kind of just sad for players of, you know, his ability. But that's just the reality of the league. You have to be able to play defense, and he's just not in a position where he's really able to do that. I do see some value for him in the form, like, you know, a specialist sort of role, 10 minutes a game, where, look, he brings size that nobody else is bringing. Like, this guy's bigger than Boban Marjanovic. Like, he's an absolute monster. If a team that has good switchable defenders around him and just want to add in a bit of size on the interior for certain matchups, certain points in the game, want to add some size to their offense, I think that the floor for him is decently high in the sense that, like, he's going to be able to provide there. But in terms of being like averaging like a lot of minutes in the NBA, I just can't see it happening without him getting played off the floor.
Yeah, he for him to really hit any high-end outcomes, he'd need to really advance his post game, which, Even though that's his best part of his game, again, you see him backing in Klingon, and Klingon's playing him completely to his right shoulder. He still would refuse to drop left, and he's still just not a very good passer at all. So that needs to take a massive step up for him to be really good in the NBA, and then that doesn't even include the fact that he's probably never going to be good defensively either. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough road. There are some paths. He's also pretty old, right? Like, he's 22.
He's about to turn 22.
So you know, it would be a different story if he was a 19-year-old doing this in college. So, yeah, I think he'll probably be, you know, Luka Garza, maybe a little better. Maybe Enes Kanter.
Yeah, Garza is a decent comparison because he was also a player of the year, came into the NBA as a late second pick. And, he's actually just earned himself a spot on Minnesota's playoff roster. But, yeah, not nearly as impactful there. I would say he'll probably get a bit more out of Edey than Garza in the NBA.
I would agree.
But, yeah, I see the comparison there. So I think we're in agreement. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of, like, these analysts, these former NBA players who, I don't know how to describe it, but the type of people who, like, I actually respect their opinion on how NBA basketball is played. I haven't seen anybody suggest that Zach Edey is just going to be able to figure this out in the NBA. So I don't know. I guess ESPN's mock draft is Gavoni, who's very good at doing mock drafts, and he has him 13th right now. I suppose we'll see how that changes down the line. But yeah, I personally struggle to see this working at the next level, unfortunately. And I think that's a good place to end this one off. Let's go to any betting. Final week of the NBA season. Not a big slate today. I know it's a huge slate tomorrow, so I'm not sure you have anything for tonight, but maybe going to the future side of things, is there anything betting wise that you could provide for today's show?
Yeah, no, I have a couple plays for today. One is going to be something that is different than what I've released most of the season. I'm going Celtics first half -1, pretty much across the board. You can get that -0.5, 1.85 at FanDuel as well. This I just bet prior to coming on the show. We can pull it up on Betstamp. MGM -1.15. That's probably the best number there.
Yep.
Just Celtics, I anticipate, are going to go mostly trial run tonight. Obviously, these lines have been completely nerfed by the fact that the Celtics haven't really been trying, have been kind of stopped playing in the second half. I think that even the full game price, I don't mind for the Celtics. I anticipate most of the guys are going to go, and they're going to use this as kind of the final dress rehearsal before really taking their foot off the brake for these next few games. And yeah, the Knicks definitely have a significant motivation factor here. But again, this line would be Celtics -4 in the first half if it was anticipated that the Celtics were going full go. So I think with the potential that they're just going to be full and go full dress rehearsal, we already know Brown's in, White's in, and Tatum's in. I think Kristaps is likely to go. Drew, I'm less sure about. But as we talked about, I don't think Drew is that important here. I just think there's maybe a bit of an overcorrection here based on the Celtics being taking their foot off the gas and being locked into the spot in this game being important for the Knicks. There's just too much of a gap between the true price versus what it's priced at now.
Okay, so there's your play. It's Boston -0.5 on the first half against the Knicks tonight. And you mentioned you had something else.
Yeah, so Fred VanVleet under 17.5 points, -125 to -130-ish is what I'm seeing around.
Okay, Fred
VanVleet. There's even better, -120 at like 365.
Yeah, 365. Betway have that. So -120 for Fred VanVleet under 17.5 points. I'm sure -125 is also fine to bet at DraftKings or ESPN Bet or the Score Bet. But what's the handicap for this one?
Yeah, so a lot of betting here. Late season is motivation. Houston's kind of done. I think they start pulling their foot off the brake. Even last game, it looked like Fred's minutes would potentially be cut down a bit. Some Udoka quotes of you know, playing hard because they were playing a team that was also in a playoff run. I just don't see this game. I just see Houston kind of letting their foot off the brake now that they're totally out of the playoff run. They're playing a pretty unserious team in Utah. They've got a lot of young guys on the roster. I just don't really see, you know, the 38 minutes from Fred. I think we're probably going to see between 30 and 33.
Okay, so there you go. Fred VanVleet under 17.5 points, the second bet. Anything else? Is it just those two?
No, I think I think that's all good.
All right, just those two, all good there. Let's see the portfolio. Unfortunately, I think I have a way to talk about this. The Kobe White MIP bet within the space of a day was pretty much dead. Maxey had his best two games of the season in the last week.
Put up a 50 burger on us. I wouldn't call it totally dead, though. I know the market's at minus 1500. But I don't know.
Just how quick this one fell apart is not really a chance there. As for Naz Reid, definitely still in the mix there.
I still think Naz likely is going to win, but we'll see. There's been a bit of movement back and forth between those two.
Other than that, we have Jokic MVP, which looks great, even better after yesterday. We have Thunder, that's been dead for a while. And unfortunately, the Raptors dead. 29.5 is also dead. So, hey, we need a couple
Celtics.
Of these.
Celtics Finals and Eastern Conference.
We do have Celtics NBA Finals winner. Got it at 306. It's now plus 189 apparently at Penny. So if that's the case, wow, fantastic price on that one. And look, if Celtics win, then so does the Eastern Conference team to win championship. So that will be it for the show. That'll be it for the regular season. We got a nice comment here from Matt saying, just want to say thanks for the great season of analysis. Some of the sharpest content out there, no doubt, especially appreciate the Jokic MVP recommendation. Well, we appreciate everybody who has tuned in and watched. 17 Cali mentions it as well. Hey, if the show deserves some love, make sure you go spread the love. Go show it off to some people. Let some people know. But all we ask here is that you do subscribe to the channel, keep up to date with the content, and drop a like to help drive us up in the YouTube algorithm, and that will do enough for us as well. Thanks so much, everybody, for a great regular season. Keep it locked with the Board YouTube channel for more content in the playoffs as well, and of course, we will see you again soon.